This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Another week, another revelation about government spying on Americans. Are you shocked, or is this getting to be ho-humdrum? Speaking of ho-hum, members of one political party have seemed more likely to feel that way in the past about off-year elections, but it now looks like the makeup of who's planning to vote this November could be quite different than usual. Elsewhere on the political front, Virginia has a bigger-than-expected budget surplus, but it doesn't seem to be helping the governor much. Healthcare exchanges supposed to be up and operating in a few weeks. Want to give odds on whether the Old Dominion will be ready? A new survey shows one of the wealthiest members of U.S. Congress comes from Virginia. Got a guess on who that is? You probably already guessed. This is a Politics Update edition of Insight, and you will be invited to join the conversation right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. And our call-in line is open at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Once again, anything and everything political is up for discussion. Already on the phone line with us, the White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, here in the Insight studio. Bob Roberts, James Madison University's politics and public policy guru, and with us from a studio at a secret location in Charlottesville, the head of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Gibson. Welcome all, gang.
Glad to be here. Good to be with you.
Hey, Anita.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. All right, if I ask you the first question?
Sure.
I understand
would
things...
Would it be okay if I said no, would you go to someone else?
I would, yeah. I wanted to ask permission first. But since you already said yes, I'm not going to let you back out. I understand things at the White House and other government buildings, particularly state-related, have been busy this afternoon. So, question, has the administration decided what it is going to do about Syria?
They have not decided, but they're really inching closer to getting involved. The Secretary of State, John Kerry, just a few minutes ago had some brief remarks from the State Department where he had probably the strongest language so far on the use of chemical weapons in Syria. He flat out said that the United States believes that the president there in Syria is attacking his own people, basically with poison gas. And this was last week, and there's some kind of conflict on how many people died, but it's widely believed hundreds of people died. But the United States has not yet said how it's going to get involved and what it's going to do.
I'm not sure the exact language. Maybe you recall, Anita, or somebody else on the panel, but wasn't it President Obama who said some time back that use of chemical weapons in Syria was either the red line or the line in the sand?
Yeah, he did.
It was a red line.
Yeah, he called it a red line, and actually that was a year ago this week where he used that language, and it was sort of an off-the-cuff remark, meaning that it wasn't serious, but that he hadn't planned on using that strong of language. And now here we are a year later, and he had said that it would be a sort of a game changer if chemical weapons were used, and now the United States is saying we believe chemical weapons were used.
So political scientist Bob Roberts, if chemical weapons have been used and the U.S. government agrees that they have been used by the government of Syria against its people, does the Obama administration have any choice other than to intervene?
They have to do something. The question is, what do they do? And how do the Syrians respond? Do the Syrians attack Israel in response? Do we put a no-fly zone in? So they have to decide, and how will the Russians respond? Will the Russians increase their aid to Syria? So will Iran increase its aid to Syria? Will this intensify? So there are a lot of issues they have to deal with.
Behind the scenes, Anita, are you hearing people at the White House concerned about this, wishing that it would just go away, wishing that the red line language had never been used?
I think they're extremely concerned after last week. I mean, it was sort of apparent almost immediately that many people thought that the president in Syria had used chemical weapons. And so I think they're taking it really seriously. The president's been criticized by some lawmakers on Capitol Hill for taking too long and thinking too much and deliberating too much, which is sort of something that they often say. It's not just partisan. It's not just a Republican criticism. A lot of people think that he should have acted quicker. But the president is very deliberate in his approach. So he says that we're not quite there and that he needs some more time to look into it.
Well, for anybody listening, if you have thoughts about what the U.S. should do in response to the use of chemical weapons in Syria, we'd love to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Or if there's any other political topic on your mind, whether it has to do with international, national, or state or regional affairs and politics, we'd be happy to hear from you either by phone or on our Facebook page. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Our guests, Anita Kumar, Bob Roberts, Bob Gibson. And we already have some questions coming in on the Facebook page. And Anita, this first one, I think, is sort of tailor-made for you because this connects to something that you've been reporting a lot on lately on another national issue. This is from Lawrence, who says, isn't anyone outraged about all the revelations about the ways the feds are spying on us? Is it true that much more of this is going on under Obama than ever occurred with Bush? What does your panel have to say about this? So whole panel, we'll get to you, but Anita, you first.
Sure. I think that a lot of people are outraged. We're seeing a lot of citizens in polls saying that they're not sure this is the right way to go. And we're seeing a lot of lawmakers, members of Congress, saying we need to revamp things. I mean, even people that are very much on the side of the president, even Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader, has expressed some displeasure at what's been going on. And it's hard to say whether this is more or less. I wouldn't necessarily say it's more. A lot of these programs started under the former President George Bush, and President Obama said he was skeptical about some of them when he came into office, but that he reviewed them and he put in appropriate safeguards and he decided to keep many of them going. I think we're hearing a lot more about them because, you know, as we all know, we had a leaker and a contractor who had a lot of the government secrets, Edward Snowden, and he's released a lot of that information. So we're now more aware of what has happened and what's been happening than probably we have before.
You, and there have been several different revelations, but your latest that you wrote about just a few days ago for McClatchy News Service had to do with emails. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. So one of the programs that we've probably all heard about is that the government collects emails, and this program was basically started to collect email records of foreigners, those that were suspected or might have had ties or just were suspicious of some kind of terrorist activity. It is not supposed to be emails of American citizens. But what has happened is that they've had some problems with the program and they've had some mistakes. And the federal government wrongly collected tens of thousands of emails of Americans as part of that program. And it was found out in 2011. They discovered it in 2011 and had been going on since 2008, so quite some time, 3 years. And the court that oversees these programs, which is actually a secret court where they meet privately, had deemed it unconstitutional, this program, and they had to revamp the program. So the numbers for you are, I think it was 56,000 emails over those 3 years of Americans or Americans.
Out of, if I remember reading your article correctly, Anita, some 45 million that they collected of foreign nationals. And the foreign nationals were permissible under the law.
Yeah, actually, I believe that's per year. So it was actually more than that. It was actually about 250. It's about 250 each year, 250 million each year. So it's a very, very small number, but I mean, they weren't supposed to do any of that. So you can say 56,000 is a small number, but, you know, even one, it was wrong. Even one was not supposed to happen.
You have opinions, Bob Roberts, on whether or not more of this spying by the federal government on American citizens is going on in the current administration than the previous administration.
Well, I think when you look at public opinion, it's split about 50-50 on this. A lot of Americans are not concerned about this, that they're willing to give up their privacy to protect against attacks. On the other hand, you have a lot of Americans who are upset about this. But it's not as if everybody's upset about this. A lot of Americans aren't.
But Lawrence's question is, isn't there more of this kind of spying going on under President Obama?
We don't know. Well, I would suspect not. This took off during the administration of George W. Bush. The Patriot Act permitted a lot of it. And therefore, I think they're getting better at doing it, because the technology's improving and therefore they can do more of it. But I'm not sure they're doing any. I'm not sure it's been expanded under Obama. In other words, the idea that here's Obama engaging in all these unconstitutional acts. There's a line out there, you know, if he does too much more of this, we're going to impeach him. In other words, I don't think, you know, this is part of more of a political line.
I do think it's why the president said a couple weeks ago that he wanted to look at these programs, and if there are changes that need to be made, then he would make them. Although he was pretty vague about that. There were a couple things he supports that Congress was looking at, but he basically said, I'm going to work with Congress to revamp these any way we need. I mean, there weren't a lot of specifics coming from there.
Our analysis panel today on Virginia Insight, White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, former newspaper reporter, now head of the Sorensen Institute, Bob Gibson, and from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Department's Bob Roberts. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. Our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK, but we got lots of other stuff coming in on our Facebook page. And Bob Gibson, we haven't heard from you for a while, so how about if I toss Frank's question to you? He writes, have other Virginia governors ever faced ethics scandals like the one the current governor is facing?
I don't think so. I think a lot of us were very surprised when Bob McDonnell fell under the heavy scrutiny of the U.S. attorney and the federal grand jury for accepting gifts that traditionally we had not heard of other governors accepting in the large numbers and amounts that this governor and his wife and family have accepted. So I think we're in new territory here, and I think it's entirely unclear whether it will go away and not result in any legal action or whether there will be some action coming from the federal grand jury and the U.S. Attorney's Office. If that does happen, I think it'll happen in the next week or two. But I'm not betting on an indictment.
I think this is a little the governors. Washington Post ran a story a few, I think it's up on their website, that they list the gifts that Kane took and Warner took, all those gifts. And they were in
the two previous governors, both Democrats.
Yeah. They were in hundreds of thousands of dollars. The difference here is, these gifts came from an individual who then, arguably, the governor and his wife did things for.
Let me make sure I'm tracking.
Okay.
The difference here, what you've switched to now, is the difference with the current Republican governor, Bob McDonnell, and his problems with the gifts received from the president of the company, Star Solutions.
Right.
Okay.
And so governors have traditionally taken lots of gifts. This isn't anything new. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in gifts. Kane, Warner, previous governors have. The difference here is the allegation that, which have been, the grand jury hasn't decided this, whether there was a quid pro quo.
That's true. And there has been no prior investigation of a former governor for that kind of gift receiving.
Right.
State laws are very, very lax as far as reporting gifts, and they will be tightened up in the next General Assembly in some way or another for sure, because both parties are making that a campaign promise. But there is no prior set of facts like this set of facts.
No.
I would say one other thing is different. I mean, clearly governors in the past, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter, have gotten gifts, travel and vacation rentals,
correct,
and all those sorts of things, even, you know, gifts to their home or to themselves or whatever. I was struck, though, that the current governor, Bob McDonnell, actually accepted cash loans that he said he was going to pay back, though he had not started doing so, I don't believe. Loans from people, multiple people actually, more than one person, and not just this guy at this company, because he was in financial dire straits, basically, on some rental property. The taking of loans is, to me, very different than we've seen or than we've heard of in the past.
Oh, that is different, I mean, clearly. But nothing under Virginia law prohibits it.
Right.
What's prohibited is a quid pro quo.
Right.
And the mere fact that you're taking this stuff, we don't regulate it. And therefore, you know,
some people listening may not be familiar enough with the allegations to know what the supposed, if it in fact existed, quid pro quo might have been.
Right.
So we can get to some of that and lots of other questions we've got coming in here on our Politics Update edition of Virginia Insight. But one quick question for Anita before we hit the break. Did the McDonnell administration lie to you when you were a Richmond reporter?
They did not tell the truth. How's that?
Oh, good. Well, we get some details on that, too, in just a bit more than 1 minute. Bob Roberts is a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. Bob Gibson reported on politics at the Charlottesville Daily Progress for some three decades before taking his current post as executive director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership. Actually, back when she was still young, Anita Kumar may have run into Mr. Gibson at the Daily Progress because she did some reporting there. In her
Are you
career.
Saying we this, I'm no we longer this, young?
Yeah, we're but then what does that make Gibson?
And she was in our newsroom, yes.
Yeah, well, then she went on to a number of other journalism endeavors, including covering Virginia politics for the Washington Post for many years. Despite all that, she has still managed to become White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service. And from that post, for some reason, she's still willing to speak with us. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. So the reference just before we went to the break was when you were still working for the Washington Post out of the state capitol, you asked some people in the McDonnell administration some very specific questions about gifts. And tell us about that and what they told you.
Sure. One of the governor's daughters, he has five children, one of his daughters got married, and she got married at the executive mansion where the McDonald's live, as the governors live. And it was, I went and covered it. I didn't cover the wedding. I went and looked at the festivities and the tents and got a little tour there. And I wrote a little something about the wedding. It's not too often that someone's married at the mansion. And I had asked who was paying for the wedding, and I was told that the McDonald's were paying, that the family was paying. And what we were alluding to there is that it has come out recently that Johnny Williams, the CEO we were talking about of Star Scientific, paid for the catering at the daughter's wedding, and that was a $15,000 expense.
And she has now repaid that.
She has repaid it.
And the quid pro quo.
Yes.
That would make this a criminal matter,
right?
And what federal investigators are looking into,
right,
is whether or not, in return for the loans, the gifts, the cash that the governor and family members,
right,
got from Johnny Williams, did the governor do something? Did he take some state government action,
right,
to benefit Mr. Williams and his company?
Right. That's the issue. And he held a event at the governor's mansion promoting the product.
Well, actually, Anita, there's a clarification that you probably want to make on that. It wasn't the governor that held the meeting.
It wasn't the governor that held the meeting. It was actually the first lady that held the meeting.
He attended.
He did attend at her urging, according to emails that have since been,
right,
released.
Right.
The governor would argue that he did things that he would normally do for any other...
Any business.
As any Virginia business person.
Right.
And so that's going to be the thing that investigators are really looking at. Did he just do what he normally does for a Virginia businessman or woman? Or did he do something special because he got a lot of gifts from them?
And
so maybe we're reading too much into the tea leaves, but
no.
I bring up the point about the difference between what the First Lady... Mr. McDonald's wife was doing for Star Scientific,
right,
and the gift she was getting, and she did more than just this one meeting. She did a number of other things for,
right,
Star Scientific. And what the governor did or didn't do, because, Anita, there's been an interesting development in legal representation for the governor.
It has. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've learned that the First Lady has her own lawyer in this matter, and that the governor has his own lawyer, and which is unusual. Maybe it's not unusual, but we had not heard that for many months. We're just expecting that the McDonald's were represented by the same person. Why this is significant is that, I mean, their interests might not be the same here, the governor and his wife. I mean, she had a role, he had a role, and the question is sort of these lawyers are going to try to each represent their own clients, so they might not be on the same page.
Well, I expected that they had their own attorneys because of the complexity of these federal cases, and if he's maintaining, his lawyers are maintaining that he knew nothing about this,
mm-hmm,
that she would have to have her own attorney because theoretically they're right. Their interests might not be, if they take these positions, might not be identical.
Right. I mean, the governor, his attorney, his staff has argued that on a lot of these cases, a lot of these issues, including the First Lady's purchase of stock of Star Scientific, he had no knowledge,
correct,
of.
Correct.
Bob Roberts, Anita Kumar, Bob Gibson are making up our analysis panel, as you can probably tell. Anything and everything political is open for discussion. Our phone number, easy to remember, is 888-WMRA-TALK. On Facebook, we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, and on Facebook we have this from Sue, who says, right now Virginia is turning away federal money that would make it possible for tens of thousands of the state's poorest residents to get health care. Who would have to be elected to state office for this to change? Is anyone making this a campaign issue? Mr. Gibson, got a response?
I think it's rather clear from the previous statements of Terry McAuliffe and Republican opponent Ken Cuccinelli that there is a great deal of difference as to which way they would go if elected governor. And I think it's far more likely that Virginia would expand the health care coverage to poorer Virginians if Terry McAuliffe were elected governor, and it's far less likely that that expansion would occur if Ken Cuccinelli is elected governor.
Technically, the deal that was struck to get the budget was we have this commission made up of legislators and experts who, as if the reforms made to the Medicaid program are adopted, and a lot of them have already been approved by the federal government, then the commission would, in a sense, allow the expansion to go into effect.
This is a state of Virginia commission set up by the Virginia legislature, the General Assembly.
Now, if the commission under the law says that the requirements have been met, under the law, expansion occurs without the governor's signature. Now, Attorney General Cuccinelli has said that's not legal. He has said in his opinion that whole system is not legal. And therefore, if he's elected governor, would he use his executive power to block expansion? I suspect he would, and then I expect this would be entangled in the courts for a while.
Well, Sue's question also asks about who has to be elected to state office for this to change. There's also all of the legislative body, all of the senators, all of the members of House of Delegates and the Virginia General Assembly are up for election.
Just the House, not
just the
Senate.
House.
The Senate is not?
No.
No, the Senate has 4-year terms, and their 4-year terms conveniently allow them to run for governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general without giving up their seat in the middle of their term.
Yes, only the House of Delegates and the governor, attorney general, and lieutenant governor are up next year.
You know, I really should take a look at the calendar before I get into this seat. I'm sorry.
No, this is very confusing.
So this is how we look smart.
Yes.
Thank you for that. And I'm happy to play dumb guy just so you guys look smart.
Okay.
I do it so well. So the House of Delegates could block Medicaid expansion?
No. The way that the bill was passed was that if the commission approves it, and they have to make a decision by January, it goes into effect. It's automatic. The Democrats wouldn't agree to the budget without that provision. The Attorney General has said that's illegal.
Well, I remember the last time the governor, Bob McDonnell, was with us on one of these panels. It has been several months. We've actually invited him a couple of times since then, but for some reason his schedule hasn't allowed since the ethics scandal has come up. But I asked him specifically, there was this compromise that was much reported that the Democrats think that they're going to get Medicaid expansion if certain conditions are met.
Right.
Is it possible that the Democrats made a deal that they didn't understand? And in essence, what the governor said is, I'm opposed to Medicaid expansion, I don't think the Democrats understood what they signed off on.
It depends upon what the law means. And ultimately, if, for example, the commission votes yes, and let's say Terry McAuliffe is governor, then probably it would go into effect. If Attorney General Cuccinelli, I think he would say, it didn't automatically go into effect and block it. And then it would be up to the court, Supreme Court of Virginia, to determine whether the legislature actually had made it automatic upon the decision of the commission. So we don't know.
Well, hey there, you listener person. I'm just curious. Have you decided who you want to be the next governor of Virginia? If so, what persuaded you? If not, what do you still need to know? By phone, we are at 888-WMRA-TALK. On Facebook, we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. We got this on Facebook from Mike, who says, is it true Republicans are promising a big cut in state taxes if they win for governor? Can you give us details, Bob Gibson?
Well, there is a promise from Ken Cuccinelli, the Republican nominee for governor, that he would trim by 13% to 15% the Virginia income tax at the top level that most Virginians pay. So there would be a slight decrease in the income tax for almost all Virginians if Ken Cuccinelli were elected and were to follow through on this promise. However, it's very difficult to see where that revenue would be made up. And Virginia does rely on the income tax, even though it's one of the lowest rates in the states, for a significant portion of its budget. So it's going to be an interesting promise to see how in detail it would be kept.
Yeah, the Attorney General, much like Mitt Romney during his campaign, has refused to detail what exemptions or deductions he would eliminate to deal with the reduced revenue from the make up the reduced revenue from lowering the income tax. That plan was very similar to the no car tax proposal Mr. Gilmore, Governor Gilmore, proposed when he was running. But it has not
also Republican.
It did not catch on.
Well, the car tax was a very unpopular tax,
right,
that most Virginians had to pay at one time or
right,
twice a year at
right,
a very high rate out of their pockets.
Right.
Whereas the income tax is one of the lowest rates in the
right,
states and has not resulted in an outcry.
No, not at all. And so that strategy didn't work. What's interesting, I was surprised that Attorney General Cuccinelli wanted to play populist. That he did not propose to do away with the tax on food. I think that if he had proposed to do away with the remaining 2.5% tax on food, that may have had some traction. That may have worked a lot better than the idea of reducing the income tax. But he chose not to do that.
Okay, so I'm trying to look up these latest polling numbers while you guys are talking. And Anita, if you have anything to bring up, please feel free.
Okay.
Is,
are you talking about the Quinnipiac poll
between
McCollum
and
Ken Cuccinelli?
Yeah, that was the
42.
Six points for Terry McAuliffe.
Right.
For the
Democrat. But you're talking about a different part of the poll than I was going to ask you about.
Oh.
And I just wanted to have this.
Who's likely to vote?
The part. So
absolutely.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Because I was afraid that you wouldn't know.
Because the Republicans were hoping that the profile of voters in November of 2013 would be different than the profile of voters in 2012. And that there would be a much higher representation of white men. There would be a lower representation of African Americans. There'd be a lower representation of young voters. And
that's usually the case.
That's usually
the case. Off-year elections.
Now, what these pollsters are saying is that's not going to happen. Is that their polls are indicating that you are not going to see a significant percentage drop off in minority voters, young voters, women voters, that are the key of the Democratic base. Whether that's true or not remains to be seen.
I found it. You want the exact numbers?
Yes.
Quinnipiac poll released last week shows that of those people who say that they are going to vote
right,
in November, Democrats outnumber Republicans 39% to 32%.
Right.
And Bob Gibson, if that actually happened, that'd be a big deal, wouldn't it?
It would be, but I think it's very, very difficult for a poll to measure that kind of thing, especially in the middle of August.
I agree.
So, polls are not predictive. Polls are basically a snapshot in time. And at the week that this was taken, there was more heavy television advertising, perhaps against Ken Cuccinelli by the Democrats and outside groups, than there was the commensurate heavy advertising by Cuccinelli against Terry McAuliffe. So I think it's difficult to say that Democrats are going to turn out in much larger numbers or 7% more likely to turn out than Republicans. There is a problem with polling also because you can't tailor the size of the electorate from people's responses to a poll question. The politically correct answer is, yes, I'm a likely voter. And it's much more easy to measure whether or not they're a likely voter based on their past voting participation than it is what they say in a poll. So it could be that, McAuliffe has a 20-point lead among people who say they are for Terry McAuliffe and aren't going to vote.
Right.
I think it's really important to just remember, again, it's August. A lot of people are on vacation, and even though these guys have been running for months and months and months, you know, a lot of people won't pay attention for weeks still, months still. I mean, we've got a lot of months going.
But here, if you look at previous gubernatorial elections in terms of polling, there hasn't been a huge change in poll numbers after September 1st, remarkably. I mean, if you go back and look at race after race at race, normally, for example, when George Allen caught up against Mary Sue Terry back in 93, he caught up during the summer. And in fact, if McDonald, in terms of when he ran 4 years ago, he had a pretty substantial lead by September. So I'm not sure. I mean, these poll numbers may be early, but it's not unusual for poll numbers to remain fairly stable in Virginia.
Although that one last 4 years ago was a landslide.
I know.
This will be much closer.
Oh, no, this is going to be a very close race. This will be a very
close. It is pointing to a close election. The one thing that's encouraging for McAuliffe is that the Quinnipiac organization has taken several polls since the spring, and Terry McAuliffe's lead has grown slightly
from
2% to 4% to 6% now. But that doesn't guarantee that these people are all going to show up and vote in November.
I have to say,
just a second, if you would, because I'm so excited. We have a question coming in that is not on Facebook. It's an actual person willing to share their voice, and it is not somebody named Bob.
Very good.
So we're going next to North Garden. Janet, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Bob Roberts, Bob Gibson, and or Anita Kumar, please.
Well, thank you for your show. I have a question. I'd like to know how Governor McDonald can declare a surplus when responsibilities from the state are either not being met or are being transferred to the counties.
What do you mean by responsibilities not being met or programs being transferred to the counties?
There's a lot of issues with our roads that aren't being addressed. And then there are also... I'm on the board for Albemarle County Social Services, and I see that they're picking up things that are transferred from Richmond that Richmond just decided we're not doing anymore. You need to do in Albemarle County.
Can you give us an example, Janet?
Yes, the Children's Health Program. I think it's the state agency, maybe called DMAS. I'm not absolutely certain of the state, but it used to be that the county just... clarified the person's eligibility, and then the state picked it up. Well, no longer. They want the county to manage all of that.
Bob Gibson, were you about to jump in?
Yes. There are two tricks that the state uses to create surpluses. Right. One is time-honored, and that is to lowball the revenue estimates for the state, to basically be conservative, and as they should be, but perhaps overly conservative in estimating the amount of money that's likely to come into the state's tax coffers. And another trick the legislature uses in tough times is to shift the shared responsibility levels between the state government and the local governments to put more of that responsibility on the local governments, as Janet says they're doing in this case, and is very likely because it's a time-honored tradition to shove more of the burden onto localities, and almost all of Virginia's services are shared by the states and localities.
Right. So the governor's announcement in the past few days that the state had a $585 million surplus, calling it the biggest in Virginia history, in your all view, is a little suspect.
No, it's a surplus, but it's typical to get surpluses by lowballing revenue estimates and by shifting responsibility to the
and equally
to localities.
Equally important, in the 1980s, we had surpluses the same dollar amount and a much smaller budget. So this is a much larger budget, and the surplus is a really small percentage of the total budget.
Janet, fascinating question. Thanks so much for sharing it with us. We're going to continue here on Virginia Insight in just a bit more than 1 minute. We do have three politics watchers with us today, speaking to us from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, the man who heads up the Sorensen Institute, Bob Gibson, here at the Insight table in the Insight studio, sitting really close to me, James Madison University political science professor Bob Roberts. And far, far, far too far away from us, we're still hoping to get her into our studio someday, speaking with us by phone, White House correspondent for the McClatchy Newspaper Group, Anita Kumar. And by the way, my name's Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Anita, did you have something that you wanted to get to?
Did I have something?
Well, yeah, I had other things, but I was trying to mind read across the distance there. Was there something else that we haven't gotten to yet that you had on your list?
Well, we had talked about, I know we had just talked about the state finances, and we had talked a little bit about the federal, we were going to talk a little bit about the federal government.
That's right. Such a grand idea. I'm glad you remembered that.
I did remember.
Will it shut down?
Will it shut down? That's the big question here in Washington.
The federal government, not the state government.
The federal government.
So the federal government's new budget, new fiscal year starts October 1st. So that's what, not how many, 5-6 weeks until that deadline. And Congress and the White House are not very close to a deal. Not very close is an understatement. They, according to some people, are no longer talking. You know, Congress is on recess for 5 weeks. They don't come back until the week after Labor Day. So September 9th, I believe, is the date. So when they come back, they'll have a few weeks left to kind of to make a deal. What's largely expected is, well, they could shut down the government. The other option is that they could come up with what they always do, which is sort of a quick fix. They don't fully do an entire budget, but they do what's called a continuing resolution, just keeps the bills being paid. But they've got a lot of fiscal issues in front of them. You know, that deadline, then there's another looming deadline. That's what we call whether to raise the debt ceiling. And that's supposed to come at the end of the month as well, but I think they might postpone it for a month. So we don't really know what's going on.
And they will they still try to defund Obamacare, or has that ballooned?
You know, some Republicans had threatened to shut down the government if Congress doesn't, if the federal health care law that we call, that many people call Obamacare, continues on. I think that that's a small minority of Republicans, because we've heard in recent days several Republicans saying that's not a great idea. So I'm not sure that's going to happen. I think they have real decisions to make, though. It's the same thing we've been hearing. You know, should these automatic cuts that went into effect earlier this year, should those continue? You know, it's always the issues about taxes. It's the same issues over and over again, and Democrats and Republicans in Washington just don't agree.
You think, Dr. Roberts, if this debate goes too far, if there actually is a threat of a shutdown or an actual federal government shutdown, that would be especially bad for Republicans in Virginia?
Oh, absolutely, because we have hundreds of thousands of federal employees in this state, and including civilian and military. And in theory, we went through this before back in, I believe, 95, when they shut down the government when Bill Clinton was president, that federal employees didn't get paid. They got paid retroactively, but they didn't get paid. And if you had hundreds of thousands of federal employees not getting paid a couple of weeks before the election, that is not going to help, I believe, the Republican candidate for governor.
Because you think that the people who are not getting paid are going to blame that on Republicans?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That's what they did last time.
I love how many political emails I now get in my inbox every day. Dozens and dozens. Got this one just before we went on the air today, gang. So let me read the first few paragraphs. Dateline Marion, Virginia. E.W. Jackson, Republican nominee for lieutenant governor in Virginia, spoke today about the rising toll on Virginians caused by Obamacare. Quote, as I meet today with the dedicated staff of hospitals in Marion and Abingdon, Virginia, both part of the Mountain States Health Alliance, one topic that is sure to come up is the impact of Obamacare. We have already seen the fact that 15,000 spouses of United Parcel Service employees are now being denied health coverage for 2014, due in large part to the rising costs directly attributed to Obamacare. Closer to home, the University of Virginia is also denying coverage of spouses for next year, as well as they attribute this policy change directly to a $7 million increase in cost caused by provisions of Obamacare. My prayers go out to these families as they look to find health coverage in the face of the broken promises made by President Obama. You got a big smile on your face. I know you want to talk about this.
Okay. It's interesting. That statement is not exactly accurate about UVA, because what UVA has done is it will deny coverage to working spouses. So if your spouse is unemployed or is staying home, whatever, they will still get coverage. But it's a working spouse who has other insurance provided by their employer. So it's not as if they're going without insurance. They have to purchase the insurance from their employer, or if they're eligible, go on the exchanges that will be operating in theory by January 1st.
Bob Gibson, are we going to get you in trouble over there at UVA if we ask you to speculate on why the university is cutting back on its healthcare offerings?
Well, it is. It was somewhat of a surprise when this was announced late last week. As Bob Roberts points out, it is for working spouses and those not employed, as mine is, by the University of Virginia. So Sarah and I are lucky enough to have double UVA coverage because we each work for the university, and we won't be losing what some working spouses of UVA employees will be losing.
So are we allowed to point out that the Sarah that you're talking about is the
Sarah McConnell of With Good Reason, who puts out a public radio program across the state and around the nation every week.
You two are married to each other.
This is true. And we were competitive reporters when we got engaged, and now we cooperate.
Okay, so let me mention for anybody who's just joined us, our analysis panel today on Virginia Insight unfortunately doesn't include Sarah McConnell, but it does include White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, former newspaper reporter and now head of the Sorensen Institute, who is married to Sarah, Bob Gibson, and from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Department's Bob Roberts. My name's Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. So do we want to talk about wealthy people in Congress, since we were talking about Congress possibly shutting the government down?
There's lots of wealthy people in Congress.
Yeah. So The Hill newspaper recently published its survey of the 30th richest members of Congress. Anybody want to guess who the wealthiest member of Congress overall is?
Anita?
Senator Rockefeller.
You know that?
West Virginia.
That would have been my guess. Actually, he comes behind a member of Congress from Virginia, and that member of Congress from Virginia is not even number one. Okay.
I saw Senator Rockefeller was four. Since I already know the first, I'm not going to say.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's Representative Daryl Issa from California,
right,
whose wealth is listed by this survey at $355.5 million.
Didn't he bring us a lot of car alarms? Wasn't that his business?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, Viper anti-car theft system.
Yep.
Wow. Did you read this article, too?
No.
You just know that stuff. Okay, so we didn't have anybody call in and guess, but I'm assuming that our incredibly astute panel knows who the super wealthy member of Congress from Virginia is.
Mark
is
Warner.
He the gentleman who spent $11 million of his own money running for the U.S. Senate the first time against John Warner,
right,
and then decided to run for governor and won?
You know, if it was anybody else besides you, Gibson, I would think they were showing off. But you just know, that stuff just dribbles out of you because you can't keep it all in. Yeah,
well,
Mark
not everybody
Warner
spends $11 million of their own money on a race in Virginia.
Mark Warner, of the 30th richest members of Congress, according to this survey from the Hill newspaper, Virginia Senator Mark Warner is listed as number three, with total wealth of $88.5 million. So, you know, what is that? That's like a third of the wealthiest guy. Rockefeller, Senator Rockefeller from West Virginia, is listed as fourth with about $5 million less than Senator Warner.
Who was second? I forgot.
I can't believe you would have forgotten.
I forgot. It was only Senator Warner that I was thinking of.
Representative Michael McCaul, Republican from Texas, who I know nothing about.
I don't either.
But there was one other person who made the list from Virginia. I was trying to see if I could find it. Oh, yeah. The congressman from Eastern Virginia, whose name I always mispronounce.
Scott Ridgel.
Is it Ridgel? Scott Ridgel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a car dealer, been a very successful car dealership owner in Norfolk for some time.
But he only ranks 28th.
Oh, 28th.
And surprising to me, the one Kennedy in Congress, Representative Joe Kennedy from Massachusetts, only ranks 23rd. But, you know, so that's enough about
that. Well, the new ambassador to Japan outranked all but Daryl Issa.
That's right. Absolutely.
Okay, we had this other question that came in here. This was on email. This is from another Seuss who says, this is what I've been hearing. Terry McAuliffe is a shady, slimy, underhanded salesman who's made millions in sneaky business deals that he used his political connections in government to pull off. Ken Cuccinelli is a rigid, extreme, religious conservative who wants to make his personal religious views into law, including making it a crime for consenting adults to have sex. Is there any truth in these portrayals? If so, is there someone else we can vote for governor?
Nobody's talking?
No one's talking. Is there truth?
We're waiting for Anita because it mentioned something that she explained to us last time.
That I'm what?
That I think Sue is alluding to something that you explained to us last time about Mr. Cuccinelli and the crimes against nature.
I'm not biting on that.
Oh, please don't say that.
Oh, thank you.
Is there any truth in most of these allegations? No. In other words, if they were true, I think a lot of people would be in jail or not in politics. I think they are. What we're seeing in the campaign is that both campaigns publicly are spending their campaign dollars on very, very negative ads. And they're not spending them on issue ads and saying what they're going to do. On their web pages, they may tell you what they're going to do, but clearly in the ads, they're saying the other guy is terrible and don't vote for them. And so I think this is somewhat unique in this race that it's so negative so early.
As for the other part of the question, Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling, who at one time was contesting the Republican nomination with Ken Cuccinelli until Ken Cuccinelli's forces took over the Republican machinery and made it a convention instead of a primary, at which point Bill Bowling dropped out of the race. It is now highly speculated that people will be writing in his name, but there is no write-in campaign. And I heard Bill Bowling make a speech Friday night in Williamsburg, and he said, no, there is no write-in campaign. There are no plans for a write-in campaign. That would be very difficult to pull off. And my name is B-O-L-L-I-N-G.
There is a libertarian candidate who I should be shot for.
Well, actually, before you say that, let me give Jeremiah credit.
Okay.
Because on our Facebook page, he just posted this question. What are the chances of Robert Sarvis, is that correct?
Right.
Becoming governor. Okay, Bob Roberts.
Not much. But the but the real question becomes, could he draw votes away from either Cuccinelli or McAuliffe? I think he could draw some votes away from Cuccinelli.
And should he be included in the polling that's being done?
Right.
He's not being included in the polling.
He should, because clearly on the moral issues that Cuccinelli has pushed, not during the campaign, but historically, there are a lot of libertarians in Virginia who don't like those positions. And therefore, they may bolt and vote for the libertarian candidate.
He's probably not included on very many, but I distinctly remember a few weeks ago he was included on one, and I was surprised at how much he had gotten.
That's like 7%.
Yes. Yeah, it was like 6 or 7%, which doesn't sound like a lot, and it's not a lot. He's not going to win, but that can really change the race.
Absolutely.
In a race that's that close, that could really change the race.
It could.
Yeah. And it was surprising because it was so early in the race. That really shows maybe people probably don't really know him, but they might not like the other two guys.
I think that tells a lot about concern over Cuccinelli's moral social agenda among libertarians. And the Republican Party has a large libertarian contingent.
You know, we have almost 2 minutes left, and so this is like unprecedented to throw the surprise question Anita. Early, but we're going to do it anyway. Anita, you want to tell us a little bit about Todd Schneider?
Oh, sure. That's the surprise question?
Yeah. Well, you know who he is.
Todd Schneider is the former executive chef at the Executive Mansion in Richmond. So he was the chef for the McDonald's as they were in for a little while, I guess. He left last year. He is now facing his own trial. That's actually how this whole investigation with the McDonald's started. The executive chef was under investigation, and he has since been charged on embezzlement, for 4 counts of embezzlement. And he actually has turned on the McDonald's and said he had some information on them. And so he shared with investigators information on the McDonald's that it now prompted the federal investigation into them.
And interesting, what Snyder alleged was that when he was chef, he operated a catering business. And he operated a business on the side, which was catering, and that he was told by somebody in the mansion, I'm not sure who, that instead of being paid, for activities he did outside his, I'm not sure his official duties were, they told him take food.
Right. And now he, in turn, is being charged with embezzlement for taking the food.
Right.
Now, we're not talking about, you know, a box of cereal here. We're talking about a serious amount of of food and other and items from the mansion.
Right.
So it's four counts of embezzlement, and his trial is scheduled, conveniently, 3 weeks or so before the next election for governor. So it's October 15th. Now.
Okay, Anita, now we do have just 15 seconds left. Your former newspaper, The Washington Post, speculated recently that if there is an indictment handed down by federal prosecutors against Virginia's current governor, it would come before Labor Day.
Right.
Do you have any idea how accurate they are about that?
Well, the lawyers and prosecutors are meeting this week, and they were meeting last week. I think that is basically because they don't want to interfere too much with the next election.
So something could be happening soon.
Right. Yeah. And
although everybody here thinks there is not going to be an indictment.
I don't think there is.
I don't think there will be.
I don't speculate on that kind of thing.
Our guests have been Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Roberts, Professor of Political Science at James Madison University, as well as McClatchy Newspaper's White House correspondent and Charlottesville native who never disappoints, Anita Kumar. Gang, thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you get to that page, you will find links to more information about Bob, Anita, and Bob. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.